We are back on the record at 2:03 p.m.
Mr. Wong.
Thank you, Mr. Public Auditor. We're prepared to close our case in chief without calling any further witnesses. But just as a housekeeping matter, we still have our diagram that was addressed with Ms. Sablon. We just want to make sure that gets considered into evidence. I don't know what the procedure is, whether you want to mark it now or just mark it later or how you want to do that.
Anyone wish to speak?
The chart.
Not the demonstrative.
Not the demonstrative. The thing I went through Mrs. Sablon with her testimony.
Okay.
Just this.
That chart?
This.
I need to object. I just have some questions. If I could clarify with Mrs. Sablon whether or not the numbers are accurate, because that would be my objection.
Well, that would be fine to do that on cross-examination, but my situation was on direct, without cross. She said these things, and this is my exhibit. Now, of course, the exhibit's in evidence, and you can cross-examine her, to determine why you don't like this, and then make other charts or whatever it is that you'd like. But I went through a direct examination, and this is what we discussed, and I think it embodies our discussion.
Well, no objection. I'll accept it into evidence.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mark it now or just leave it for now?
We'll mark it.
Okay. Approach.
Please.
Vince.
Do you have a stamp?
Just take the...
I think we're just going to remove the page.
Yeah, just take the
page. Just remove the page. I don't want to...
What I'll do is I'll take a picture of it and then post it.
Okay, that'd be fine.
I'll stamp it first.
I also have a housekeeping matter, Mr. Public Auditor. Our client representatives are informing us that they can hardly hear the audio from the hearing.
Okay.
Well, people are going to have to get closer to their microphones.
Okay. Well
done. I'm not going to require people standing up. If you can just talk into the microphone, it'd be more important to me.
Okay.
Or move the microphone closer to you.
And then, Mr. Public Auditor, I guess just all the things in the public record that have been marked and we've been discussing, I think we all want those into evidence. I'm not sure it's necessary because they're part of the public record, but I just wanted to confirm that.
They're part of the record. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. With that, GlidePath closes this case in chief.
Thank you.
Your Honor, we're ready to proceed with Mr. Burlingame. He texts me saying that there's no link. There's no link yet, but...
It's the same link that he got this morning.
Try it again?
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Mr. Burlingame. Apologies for the late start, but we're now going to have Evan swearing you in.
Hi, good afternoon. Could you please state your name for the record?
David Burlingame.
Okay. May you please raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burlingame. How long have you been an engineer? When did you graduate from school?
Since 1981.
Okay. And what firm are you part of, and how long has that been around?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
What firm, engineering firm, are you part of now, and how long have you worked
Electric there? Power Systems.
And how long have you worked there?
I started the company in 1996.
Okay, and what type of engineering consulting engineering services does your firm provide?
We consult in power systems for utilities and large industrial customers. Our main specialty is island electrical systems.
Okay, and how many studies have you done for different islanded electrical systems?
Maybe 100.
Okay, what other areas do you do other than Guam?
We've done quite a few in all of the Hawaiian utilities for KIUC, Helco, HECO, MECO. We've done some for Palau. We've done some for several of the islands up in Alaska, which are all electrically islanded. And I think those would be the main islands that we've done, electrical islands we've done.
Okay. Have you done work for GPA in the past several years?
Yes.
Okay. What studies have you done for GPA during that time?
We've done some modeling studies. We've done some studies to model various inverters and various system responses. We did a long-range system planning study to determine the limits of PV that could be added to their system and what improvements would be required in the GPA system in order to make it work. And we've done a lot of system impact studies for GPA.
Okay. Did you do any of the system impact studies for either phase one or phase two solar?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And what were the results of those studies?
We did kind of an after the fact on phase one. We didn't do the initial phase one study, but we came in after the fact on phase one and did some studies. On phase two, we did the complete system impact study, and the conclusion of our system impact study was that there were improvements that GPA needed to do in order to add phase two to their system, and that the characteristics of the phase two PV would have to be different than phase one in order for the GPA system to accept that energy.
Okay. What assistance studies did you provide to GPA with regard to phase three?
Phase three, we did a long-range planning study, which provided the limits of both phase three and phase four to determine how much PV GPA could add to their system and what the characteristics of that PV would need to be in order for the system to operate.
What were your conclusions on that study as to whether battery storage was needed for any of those additional solar projects?
Our conclusions were that for any PV subsequent to phase two, that all PV would need to include battery storage, and that all PV would need to be delivered in non-daylight hours through a load shifting ESS.
Okay, did you assist with the design? What would be needed for that?
We developed the required characteristics of the ESS and the PV. The configuration and also the response characteristics.
Okay. Did you, were there any technical materials that you relied on to assist with that?
I wouldn't say there was anything specific. We've done a lot of studies on PV and a lot of studies on batteries, just a lot of experience. We relied on our planning studies that we completed for GPA to determine what the characteristics of the phase three PV needed to be. But we didn't rely on anything from any particular vendor or manufacturer. It was really a technical requirement based on the technical requirements of the studies.
In looking to that, did you assist with any part of the update to volume two, the technical proposals?
Did we assist with what?
Did you assist GPA in preparing the technical qualification proposals, the update in December 2018?
Yeah, we drafted the original technical qualifications and filled in all the key technical parameters, provided the tables for all the short circuit data and all the response data.
What was the reason for limiting the output to the grid for the combined solar battery project to 30 megawatt AC at each project site?
The 30 megawatts AC requirement was an attempt to prevent load shedding on the GPA system if the battery system was lost. So in GPA's planning criteria, they have a criteria that the loss of any single contingency can't create load shedding. And the loss of anything above 30 megawatts in the future system would cause load shedding. And so that's why the 30 megawatts was chosen. So it's a system reliability requirement, not a PV or ESS requirement. It's a contingency requirement.
Okay. And so what did the system studies show about the, was that the need to limit the size of a contingency loss of a plant?
It showed that if you had something, above 30 megawatts, that you would run the risk and most likely incur at least first stage load shedding.
And it was your intent to make sure that didn't happen, right?
That's correct. That violated the planning criteria that was adopted by GPA.
Okay. Did you assist in the what we're calling the 145% amendment? As to a limitation on the battery storage?
Yes, I believe that we actually proposed the 145% initially to GPA.
And what was the purpose or intent behind the 145% requirement, or at least a greater than 145%?
Because without the requirement of the 145%, you could get a PV system that had 10 or 11 or 12 hours of charge, and we only had 4 or 5 hours of discharge. So if the ESS wasn't rated for considerably higher than the PV charging system, then you couldn't get all the energy out of the PV in that amount of time. So the 145% was really just an effort to try and make sure that you could always get the stored energy out of the system in the amount of time that was allocated.
Okay. What was the original amount of time for peak that was allocated for that discharge?
I think it was 4 hours, from 6 to 10, I believe.
Okay. Was that later changed?
It was later changed, I think, from 5 to midnight.
And when you talk of load shifting, what does that mean, load shifting of using a solar and a battery storage system?
Load shed means that there's a certain percentage in the GPA system. So let's say for a 30 megawatt loss of generation, GPA is going to have to shed essentially 30 megawatts of load. So during their peak time or during their off-peak time, if you trip this ESS off when it's providing 30 megawatts of energy, GPA would lose 30 megawatts worth of customers, you know, quite a few customers. And that's violates the plan criteria in terms of reliability.
So what is the purpose for the load shifting to make sure that it's all, the PV generation during the daylight is all shifted to a peak or later?
During the daytime, the GPA generation can only back down so far. You can only take so much generation offline because you still have to provide regulation, you still have to provide short circuit duty for the PV and the battery systems to work. And you get to a certain point that you can't take off any thermal generation anymore, and you can't back it down anymore, so you can't take additional PV. GBA under phase two, under a high solar condition, is at that condition right now where they can't take any more PV than what is above phase two. So in order to add more PV, you have to make load for it somewhere else. You know, you can't grow the load during the day very easily, but you can serve load at night.
What is the maximum output for a battery storage system that could be scheduled by GPA?
The maximum output is 30 megawatts.
Yes.
Are you talking about per site or?
No, I mean for the battery storage system, how large a battery storage system could you have to discharge into the GPA system?
In theory?
Well, in what's put out there?
In our long-term system studies, we studied originally 40 megawatts of AC in this phase of the system. And I think it was 45 megawatts or something like that. And then we went up to, I want to say, 200 megawatts in phase four that you can make the system work with. It's just you have to do system improvements to make that work. The GPA system as it exists today can't take really any of that.
Have you had an opportunity to review the invitation for bid and the amendments the rest of the materials that I've sent you to include the trial briefs from the parties?
I have.
Okay. What limitation, in your opinion, did the invitation for bid place on the solar PV size, the megawatt peak for the system?
On the PV side of the system, there weren't any. I mean, the PV side of the system, it has a backwards requirement that the battery has to serve 105%, has to store 105% of the PV. That's the only thing in the specification that's actually related to PV, and you know, even that is not directly related to the amount of PV, it's related to the amount of energy. So you can have as much PV as you want, but whatever you're going to get out of that energy, you have to store 105% of that in your battery. That's the only limitation on the PV side of things.
And what is the purpose of the 105% storage in the battery?
Again, that's to make sure that GPA, if you have the expected amount of energy happen in a day plus losses, that GPA can receive all that energy and dispatch it that night. So if they didn't have a requirement to store 105% of that amount of energy, GPA would not have the benefit of all that energy.
Was there a limit on the battery system storage size for the megawatt hours that could be stored in the battery?
No.
Was there any restriction of megawatt hours that would be provided by the battery storage system?
No.
Does the 145% of the megawatt rating of the PV charging system versus the ESS, does that have any restriction on the size of the DC-AC converters?
The DC-AC converter, no. The DC-AC converter is limited by the 30 megawatt rating. The 30 megawatt scheduled rating from GPE scheduled from that GPE can schedule from the ESS into their system.
What restrictions, other than the size of the South Finnegan and Navy Base Guam lots, were there on the solar PV size that any bidder could provide?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
What restrictions for the two sites, the Naval Base Guam and the South Finnegan site, were there that would restrict the size of the solar PV?
There were no restrictions on the amount of PV panels, if that's the question. There's no restrictions on the amount or quantity or size of the PV panels.
So that was strictly, the bidders, in your opinion, were strictly limited to what they could physically put on the site in whatever configuration they chose?
I can tell you that our intent was that the bidder could choose as many PV panels as he wanted to take the risk for to deliver that energy within the parameters of the ESS.
In looking at the systems that connect the battery to the panel modules, are there controls that control the battery storage and control the amount of power that comes from the PV panels to the battery storage?
There are DC to DC converters from the PV panels to the energy storage system.
And are those controllers used to limit various requirements of how the power is put out onto the grid?
No, they don't have anything to do with the power that goes to the grid.
But they have anything to do with to how the power goes to the battery storage system?
They do. The DC to DC converters are really integral to the key of the efficiency between all of the PV panels, because you can have different panels, depends on how the configuration is used, have different amounts of radiation exposure. They'll be operating at different voltages. And those DC to DC converters, you know, maximize the voltage for their panels to optimize their efficiency for those panels that they are controlling.
Then for the battery storage system, are there controls that can limit the output or how that goes out to the grid?
Sure. I mean, it's a power electronics, so it's all limited.
And that would limit the, I guess, the VARs or whatever else, the other technical stuff that goes out with that, or the, I think, the droop that's included to assist the system?
Correct. I mean, in a power electronic system, virtually all of the limitations are electronic or software, if you would. It's not like a generator, which has a hard and fast limit of how much fuel you can put in it.
And so the what is the point of interconnection for the GPA system?
It's 34.5 kV bus.
Okay. And that is where the, is that where the 30 megawatt AC limit would be for the output?
Correct.
Hi, Mr. Burlingame. My name is Joseph Rosano. I represent Glide Path.
Hi.
The studies you talked about with the 40 and 45 megawatt studies that were done, were they for the Phase 3 project?
I'm so sorry. Could you repeat that?
Sure. You talked about doing some studies for GPA. You said one was 40 and one was 200 megawatts AC. Do you recall that?
Yeah, we did studies for GPA that started at 46 and went up to 200 megawatts.
Okay. And were the studies at 200 megawatts for the Phase 3 project?
In that study, I don't think Phase 3 was clearly defined. I mean, this was done a year or two before Phase 3 went up for bid. So I think that we did some blocks to determine what was required at certain PV intervals. I don't think those related strictly to a Phase 3 amount or a Phase 4 amount, even though we may have called them Phase 3. Phase 4, the Phase 3 and Phase 4 is currently defined was not defined at the time we did our studies. We didn't know exactly what the PV amounts were going to be. So we did a range of studies to determine what the outcome would be and what would be needed.
Do you recall when the studies were done, what year?
I believe they were finished in 2016. But they were started in, I want to say, either late 2014 or 2015.
And was it one study or several studies based on different megawatt AC outputs?
It was one continuous study. I mean, the study started out at the existing system. It went up to the existing system. The existing system was assumed to be the system as envisioned in 2019. And it went through 2029.
And is it based on those studies that you made the determination that you could not, at the point of interconnection, charge into the system more than 30 megawatts AC?
That's technically stated incorrectly.
What led you to the conclusion that at the point of interconnection, you could not exceed 30 megawatts AC?
The 30 megawatts AC really does, it really is confined to an inverter. It's confined to a generator or any other system contingency on the GPA system. So it wasn't related, it wasn't something that said we're going to limit the battery system to 30 megawatts. What was decided was that because of what happens when you lose a 30 megawatt generation resource, regardless of what that resource is, you have this impact. So that impact was applied to the ESS. It wasn't something that was a restriction just on the ESS.
Okay, I'm at a severe disadvantage because I am not an engineer. So I guess what I'm trying to determine is, earlier you said that at the point of interconnection, I guess you don't want to put any more power than 30 megawatts into Guam's grid, correct? So I'm not sure I was really talking about an inverter, and of course I'm not an engineer, so my questions won't be perfect. But I'm trying to determine, you said at the beginning of your examination you didn't want more than 30 megawatts AC going into the grid, and I'm trying to figure out how you made that determination.
That determination was made not directly from these studies, but GPA made that determination looking at the results of those studies. So in the results of these studies, we did a lot of contingency evaluations where we tripped or lost a generator, an ESS, a transmission line carrying 30 megawatts of power, or 45 or whatever. And, you know, we said, okay, you know, if this megawatt loss, you're pretty safe. And if you go higher than that, you run an increased risk. And that's how that was determined.
Okay. So I guess when you're assisting, GPA, they sort of told you, based on your studies and based on all your analysis, that their safety, their comfort level was 30 megawatts AC.
I would say that it was a mutual discussion. I think GPA, it's in that range.
Okay,
a lot of things that have to improve to get to 30.
You're going to need to repeat that.
Yeah, so you came through, we kind of lost you, and we couldn't hear you. Could you start that explanation again, please?
Well, you're looking into the future. I mean, if you start off today, what that megawatt level is today, it's about 6. So it's not 30, it's 6. So, you know, with improvements, you know, Guam thinks they can get to 30, you know, when these ESSs come online. And I think that's a reasonable assumption. And then, you know, as more things are added, that number changes. Like I said, right now it's somewhere around 5 or 6 megawatts. And then that really changes as the system moves around, as you add resources and take resources away.
All right, but it's fair to say that in November of 2017, when Phase 3 IFB came out, that's where the 30 megawatt AC limitation came from that you discussed earlier in your testimony.
Correct.
Now, I heard you say that there was the only limitation on the ESS was the 105% related to the PV capacity. Is that correct?
No.
Okay.
Well, I said it was the only limitation on the PV was the fact that the ESS has to be able to store 105% of its energy. It's not a restriction on the ESS. It's not a restriction like you stated. It's kind of the opposite.
Sure, I understand. That's why you called it a backwards system, I guess. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. So then, the limitation, and if I say this wrong, please correct me. The limitation on the PV system comes from the 105% of the ESS as drafted in Amendment 13. Is that correct?
The limitation on the PV system is indirectly comes from the 105%. The 105% does not impose a direct limitation on the PV. It imposes a direct limitation on, or a direct requirement, not limitation, on the amount of energy produced by the PV. It doesn't restrict or control or dictate the amount of PV at all. What it says is the energy that's coming from those PV, your ESS has to be rated to 105% of that energy. Not the capacity, but the energy.
Okay. Do you have all of the exhibits from all the parties, or are you at least familiar with Amendment 13, and could you pull it up if I ask you to do so?
If Graham sent it to me, I can pull it up.
Okay. Let me see if it's in his exhibits.
Is that the technical update, December 2018? That's exhibit B. Okay.
I'm told it's exhibit B in GPA's exhibits. Could you find that, please? David, can you hear us?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear any of that.
Okay. Well, we kind of lost you too, so that's okay. I was asking you if you had GPA's exhibits, and if you could maybe look at Exhibit B.
Exhibit B as in Bravo?
B as in Bravo, that's correct.
I have that.
You know, on the very, after you flip it over, it's at the very top of the page, it says 11,000 of 12,044. Do you have that?
Where, what?
So it should be the second page of GPA's Exhibit B.
Okay. I see 11,000 of 1244. I don't know if it's a base stamp or not, but that's what.
Yeah, it's, I think it makes reference to the procurement record, but we'll just use that reference today.
Okay, I have that.
And were you involved in drafting this Amendment 13?
Yes, our company drafted this amendment, or the technical requirements that are included in this amendment.
Working with at GPA to assist in the drafting of this document?
Jennifer.
How did you communicate with Ms. Sablon? I'm assuming you meant Jennifer Sablon, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, sorry about that. So how did you communicate with Ms. Sablon?
It's a combination of email and phone calls.
Okay. And over the course of this project from November 2017 until the offering date, I guess in January of 2019 sometime, or thereafter, or May of 2019 sometime. How many emails do you think you sent back and forth with Ms. Sablon or her team?
I couldn't tell you. I don't have any idea.
I mean, hundreds?
I don't want to guess. I don't know.
Okay. More than 100?
You know, pardon?
Like more than 100?
I doubt it.
Okay. More than 50?
Probably.
Okay. Did you have like teleconferences and meetings where you met to mark up the documents, you know, maybe in red line or some other fashion to make sure that they were going out the way your company thought was best?
We passed drafts back and forth several times and had conferences going over each of the markups on the drafts.
And did you also assist in answering the questions from the parties, or the bidders, I guess would be more accurate?
Can you repeat that answer?
Mr. Burlingame, can you repeat that answer?
I'm sorry?
Can you repeat your answer?
Oh, I said we would get questions from GPA, but many times we wouldn't know if the questions were from GPA or if the questions were from a bidder. We just knew there were a question.
Okay, thank you. And later when the answers were prepared from GPA to the specific bidders, did you ever see those documents before they went out or no?
We saw quite a few. I don't think we saw them all, but we saw quite a few of them. I would say that we saw probably most of the technical ones, if not all.
I mean, certainly the ones that they asked you to respond to, you at least saw those.
Yes.
Am I to understand that if we were looking at page 2 of Exhibit B, that your firm came up with the bullet points that are at the bottom of that page?
Yes, we did.
To a layperson, what does the term PV capacity mean? What would that mean if you were teaching me in class? What would you tell me that meant?
Are you referring to the PV capacity in the 5th bullet point?
No, I'm just asking you, if you were my teacher and I was at engineering school and I asked you the question, you know, Professor Burlingame, what does PV capacity mean? What would you tell me?
It depends on what the system is, what it is used as. I mean, in the bullet point on the 5th bullet point here, the PV charging system is the PV capacity. It's not the capacity of the PV photovoltaic cells, it's the capacity of the PV charging system. And that's really how it's used throughout this document.
Okay, so I guess I understand then from your answer that PV charging system and PV capacity are used interchangeably, is that correct?
They are interchangeable the way they're used in this document, yes.
Okay. And then also, there's another term in this called PV installation. Would that also be kind of the same thing, interchangeable with charging system and capacity as well?
I can't say that. I'd have to see how it's used.
Why don't we take a look at that, since you're on that bullet point. The second sentence says, for instance, for a PV installation of 27, so what would that mean to me?
In that sentence, the way it's used, the first sentence defines the PV charging system, and all that's referring to the PV charging system. So for a PV charging system of 27 megawatts, the ESS shall have a minimum capacity of 40 megawatts.
Okay, so is that an example or is that a requirement?
That's an example, it's just for instance.
Okay, like an illustration for me to apply the rule that appears above.
Correct.
Another thing that I would not know as a lawyer and not an engineer is load shifting. This idea that we're going to shift the load, I guess, through the battery into the inverter and then eventually into the system. How many of these load shifting projects are sort of being accessed by utilities in the last, say, 2 or 3 years? I mean, is this a new thing or is this an old thing?
You know, in theory, it's been around for many years. There's a project in California that was kind of a pilot project. It's probably 20 years old by now. But in reality, it hasn't been until the last 2 or 3 years with the advent of battery technology, especially lithium ion, where it's gotten cost-wise, where a lot of utilities are looking at mainstream as opposed to pilot projects.
Okay. And I guess that's just because the technology in the last 5 years has gotten just, I guess, for lack of a better term, cheaper and better and safer. Is that right?
Well, I mean, if you look at PV panel itself and the batteries that go with it, each of those have dropped 30 to 40% in the last 3 years. So, you know, it's much more affordable today than it was 4 years ago.
Is this the first load shifting project for Guam?
Yes.
And I guess, how many load shifting projects do you know of on this side of the dateline?
On the Guam side of the dateline? I don't know of any. I mean, I've read of some in, I believe it's Japan, but I don't you know, I'm not that familiar with that. I couldn't tell you.
Okay. You testified earlier that the discharge time changed in the IFB from like 6 to 10 to like 5 to 12. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I believe it was 5 to 12. I can't. It changed from, I'm positive it started at 5. I believe it ended at 12. But, you know, I wasn't involved in that part of it. I read it in the amendment, but I wasn't involved in setting that.
Okay. Of course, I wouldn't think you'd be involved in saying that, but did that change any of the discharge rates that were going to come out of the battery?
It could have. I mean, it would in theory have changed the 145%. It could have gone to a lower value.
But it didn't, because we want to make sure we never put more than 30 megawatts AC through that inverter and into that system. At least that's what GPA wants.
No, that has nothing to do with it. The 145% has nothing to do with the 30 megawatts. Those are two different things.
If it doesn't relate to that, what does it relate to? What is the relationship built between the ESS and which portion? What does the 145% relate to?
145% was our estimate of what it would take on a maximum sunny day using the data for the phase one PV stations that we have on Guam. How much time, you know, if we charge on a very full day or all day, and we're trying to completely deplete that thing in 4 hours, how much bigger does ESS need to be than the PV charging system? That's where the 145% came from.
I see. So it's a relationship between the charging system and the battery system, plant and storage, is that right?
It's a relationship between the time that the battery, that the PV charging system has to charge a battery, and at what rate it charges, versus the time that a battery gets to discharge, and what rate it can discharge. So it's not as simple as what you described.
And believe me, I'm sure it's not. I guess I'm just trying to figure out is, if I was to do the math problem that exists in the first sentence, where would I get my charging system number?
You would have to assume what your PV charging system could produce.
I see.
Because you know how many hours you have, you know, roughly from, I think, PV charging really starts around 9, even though it's sunlight before then. Starts around 9 and ends around 5:30 or 6 most of the time. And, you know, during that time, there's various degrees of irradiance. You're not always getting your maximum. So you have to take an estimate of what your PV you're getting, what your charging system can put into the battery, and you make an estimate of that and say, okay, I have this many megawatt hours in my battery. I know I can only take out 30 megawatts of that. What does my battery need to be in order to do that? That's what it is.
Okay, I think I understand, because I can only take the 30 megawatts out during the discharge period.
Correct.
I've got to make sure that my battery never has more than that 30 megawatts that's going to go through the inverter in the time I'm allowed to discharge.
You're not entirely correct, but you're pretty close.
Well, was that pretty good for a lawyer or not?
It's pretty good for a lawyer, but as an engineer, you wouldn't make it.
I understand, but I appreciate the compliment anyway.
I wouldn't be a lawyer either, so.
That's okay. I couldn't build anything, so. Okay. Battery projects that your firm's been involved with in the last several years, have most of them been the new lithium ion, and I don't know that they're new, but the more recognized lithium ion batteries, or have they been these old lead-based battery type projects?
The first battery that we did was a NiCad battery. Lithium ion wasn't even on the market at that point in time. So from a cost standpoint of view, NiCad's not even really a consideration in any of these facilities anymore.
When did professionals like yourself start speccing out these, the lithium ion batteries?
I'd say probably 5 or 6 years ago.
The PV capacity or the PV charging system, it creates energy in DC, is that correct?
The PV panels provide energy in DC.
Okay. When they are charged into the battery, they're going in at DC.
Correct.
In this particular project, when they come out of the battery, they're still DC. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, I've been calling that a DC coupled system. Is that a term you're familiar with?
Yeah, it's a term that we told GPA it was a requirement for these projects.
Okay. So it was a requirement of this IFB that it be a DC.
Correct.
Maybe you could help me with a discussion we had yesterday. These batteries are rated in MVAs. Are you familiar with that?
MVA? Mary Victor Alpha?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And is MVA the same as a megawatt?
Well, first of all, the batteries aren't rated in MVA. The batteries are rated in amps.
So
a battery system gives you amps. Your power electronics can turn those amps into megawatts, that's MW, or they can turn it into MVA, which is megawatts and megavars, or they can turn it into megavars, which is megavars without megawatts. So your power electronics control what that energy of the battery, what's it used for, whether it's used for megawatts, megavars, or a combination of the two, which would be MVA.
Okay. So just to be clear, MVA and megawatt, two different things.
Correct. A megawatt at Unity Power Factor, 1 megawatt at Unity Power Factor is 1 MVA.
You'll have to explain to the student then what that means.
Well, an MVA is a relationship between megawatt and megawatters. So if you have 1 megawatt and 0 megawatters, you have 1 MVA. If you have 1 megawatt and 0 megawatt, you have 1 MVA. If you have 1 megawatt and 1 megawatt, you have 1.414 MVA. So it's a mathematical combination of how these things add together.
Okay, so I could actually calculate MVA into megawatts with some math.
If you knew the megawatts and the megawatts, you could calculate the MVA.
Okay, and if I was to do that, is there a one more number, like a power rating number?
No, you have megawatts and megawatts, you can calculate MVA.
Okay. How would I do that?
Well, MVA is equal to megawatts divided by, is equal to megawatts times the tangent of megawatts times the arctangent of megawatts over megawatts. I think that's the formula from the memory of it.
Is the top number over the MVA, since it's, I heard you say, and you tell me if this is right, megawatts divided by megabars would give me my power.
Megawatts by megabars gives you the tangent of the angle. The MVA is pretty easy. If you just take your megawatts times your megabars, that's going to give you MVA.
Megawatts times megabars.
You don't have to worry about the angle until you're going the other way.
Okay. Okay, megawatts times megabars will give you your megawatts.
MVA.
MVA.
Yeah.
What about power rating? How does that fit into this whole megawatt conversion into megabars calculation, or does it not?
Did you say power, P-O-W-E-R?
Yeah, I actually think I meant power factor. Sorry about that. Are you able to hear me?
I can hear most of the time.
Okay.
Power factor is just the cosine of the angle of megawatts over MVA.
And in this IFB, was there a power factor announced to the bidders?
Not that I know of. I think it's required to have, a 0.95 power factor leading, 0.95 power factor lagging. But the MVA during the leading and lagging is all a constant, if I remember correctly.
So you think maybe there was a leading and lagging power factor plus or minus 0.95?
Yeah, I believe it gives you the rating and MVA, and then it allows a point in 0.95 plus.
You're going to have to repeat that answer. We lost
just,
you.
Just for clarity. I'm sorry?
Please repeat that entire answer.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand that.
Can you please repeat that entire answer?
Did you ask to clarify my answer?
No, repeat it.
You garbled in the middle of...
We don't have a river. We don't have a real good connection right now.
May I ask if we can ask him on this microphone, and then maybe I can move it closer to you?
It's the connection.
It's the connection.
Yeah.
It's the Wi-Fi.
You want to, should we take 5 minutes and see if it gets better? Or?
You know, I think seeing people chat on it, I haven't used this one before.
Maybe we can ask him to disconnect
the video. Maybe to disconnect the video.
Somebody give the instructions on
that. I couldn't understand that either.
Graham, can you ask him to disconnect the video?
I'll do it. I can do it.
Okay.
It's already.
He's now disconnected.
Well, Your Honor, I'm going to object then to this examination continuing forward. I should be able to see the witness just like everyone else was able to see the other witnesses. I shouldn't be limited by the technology. And I understand that's inconvenient, but certainly I would like the best opportunity on my cross-examination as possible.
He's still on.
You know, I could actually understand most of that.
Okay, you want to try again?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So I think the public auditor had asked you possibly to repeat the last answer because we just simply did not hear it.
Repeat the last answer about NDA and power factor?
Yes, please.
Would be the best creation of 3 megawatts with a power factor of plus or minus 0.95, leading and lagging. So that means that at a power factor of 1, you would be delivering 95, you would be delivering 30 megawatts at the point of interconnection if your proposal was for the maximum of 30 megawatts. At a power factor lagging of 0.95, I don't have to get my calculator out, but I think you would be delivering 28-point-something megawatts and 1.5 or 1.6 megawatts. And those megawatts would either be minus or plus, and that's the leading or lagging power factor. But your NDA in all three cases would be 30.
Yesterday we had some discussion about the different terms and the symbols for megawatts, and if I need to, I'll approach and try to show you these things, but let me see if I can just do it by describing it. I mean, MW, what does that mean?
Well, if it's a capital M, capital W, it's megawatts.
And what if it was capital M, capital W, DC, lowercase d, lowercase c?
That's the megawatts on the DC system.
Okay. And if it was capital M, capital W, lowercase ac, what would that be?
That would be megawatts on an AC system.
Okay. So for this system, you would be calculating DC when you're talking about the DC side of the project. Is that fair?
When you're talking about, it depends on which portion of the DC part of the project you're referring to, because there's two portions of the DC, there's two parts of the project which are DC, which are have different megawatt connotations. I mean, there's the DC portion of the system on the photovoltaic side of the DC to DC converters, And there's the DC portion of the system, which is on the battery side of the DC to DC converters.
Okay.
Those are not the same.
Okay, but they're both measured in DC.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. And then we would be talking AC when you're already discharged and you're through the DC-AC inverter. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And we would measure those things on that side in M, capital M, capital W, lowercase AC.
Correct.
Okay. Then there's another term called capital M, capital W, lowercase P. Are you familiar with that?
I haven't seen it used a lot. I've seen it used in this, in some of the stuff I read on the proposals. It's not a nomenclature that we use in our design studies typically.
Do you understand it to be a DC measurement?
It is a DC measurement.
Hold on one moment. Mr. Burlingame, if we go back to that page we were looking at in Exhibit B of GPA's document, the first sentence, are you able to pull that up?
The first page?
Second page, please.
Okay, I have it.
Okay, it's the bullet points we were talking about earlier. If I was to...
It's the second bullet point from the bottom of the page.
That's correct.
Well, I think I talked about both the bottom and the second to the bottom bullet point.
You are correct. And I'm actually going to ask you a question about the one, the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the one just above the bottom.
The 125 or the 105?
The 145.
Okay.
Okay. So I just want to make sure that I understand the math. So, and I'm going to go the opposite way, and then you tell me if I'm right or I'm wrong. So if I can never put more than 30 megawatts AC into the system, right?
You can never schedule more than 30 megawatts into the system, correct?
Okay, so that's my 30. That's where I get my 30 for the math calculation, right?
Correct.
Okay, and then the 145% is the relationship between the number 30 and the number on the far left side, which would be the PV capacity.
The PV discharge, the PV charging capacity, when I think of the far left-hand slide, I think of the PV from the photovoltaics, which is different than the PV charging capacity.
Okay, but that would be my number on the left-hand side of the equation, is that right?
Correct. PM-inch charging system times 145%.
Is the term PV charging system defined in the IFB?
I'm not looked for it. I don't know.
Okay. Was there a definitional section drafted in the original IFB?
I wouldn't know that.
Okay. And earlier we discussed the interchangeability of the terms PV installation, PV capacity, and PV charging system. Do you recall that testimony?
I recall that they were interchangeable in the paragraphs that we were looking at. I haven't looked through the whole document.
I don't have any further questions. Thank you, Mr. Burlingame. I appreciate your education of me today.
Thank you.
I just have a couple questions here. Good afternoon, Mr. Burlingame. My name is Mars Johnson. I represent Engie, the interested party in this matter. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. I just want to touch on that last question asked by Mr. Rosano about the term PV charging system. If you can look at the bullet points again.
I can look at what?
The bullet point number 5 on page 2 of GPA's Exhibit B. I believe your testimony was, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that the terms PV charging system and PV installation, as they are used in this on this page, are interchangeable. Is that right?
In that bullet, they are interchangeable.
Okay. Do either one of these terms refer to the PV array itself, or do they refer to something else?
No. There's nothing in that whole section that refers to either the PV array or the megawatt produced by the PV array.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any further questions.
Were you involved with the GBA battery storage project, which is being commissioned, I think, shortly?
Yes, we have been involved with them.
Okay, and are those batteries that are there, are those similar to the ones that are being proposed for the Phase 3?
I believe they are.
So lithium batteries, so that is just the charging system standing alone, and this proposal is to add the PV solar arrays to the charging system and discharge after peak hours.
Correct.
Nothing further.
I have no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Burlingame.
Your next one. We'll take a short break.
Yeah, I was going to say
thank you. We're off the record at 3:17 p.m. We're back on the record at 3:26 p.m.
Thank you, Ms. Blon. I guess we'll, since we've wrapped up with Mr. Walsh, who will obviously still have an opportunity to cross-examine you again, no doubt. We will resume with the GPA case or whatever. I think you testified yesterday that you've been with GPA since 1994, and you have worked on, I guess, the Phase 1, 2, and Phase 3 renewable energy resource bids. Is that correct?
I've worked a part of the Phase 2, but I wasn't.
Okay. For Phase 3, When did the original invitation for a bid go out?
Oh, I think that was in November 2017.
Was there a reason for a delay? Any time during when it actually went out to the bidders and the bidders responded?
Okay, delay in the middle?
Yes.
Yes, because we were partnering with Navy and there were things that were settled between some of the requirements for the lease and what we were establishing as requirements for the bidders.
And what requirements did the Navy ultimately impose on this that were put into the bid or amendments?
So the project involves us providing land by Navy, and through this partnership, there was a waiver of any lease fees, and that was based on an in-kind consideration, which basically allowed Navy to have some kind of microgrid-capable access of a PV system. So that was something that we were trying to get from Navy to define. So that in the end, when we had this contract in place, we made sure that we were meeting the requirements of the Navy use for the waiver.
Okay, and what were those in-kind requirements, if you know?
In the end, I believe the edits that they ended up putting in was a Black Star capable inverter.
And what is that exactly?
I believe that, I don't know the full definition of it, but it would allow the system to operate without a fully functional grid, like our GPS system. So they could isolate.
Okay, what was the maximum export capacity at the interconnection point for both the South Penangaijin and the Navy base Guam site?
It was 30 megawatts.
Okay, and what was the basis for any restriction to 30 megawatts?
The main reason was because our system is a small system, so any loss of generation will have an impact on the grid, causing breakers to open, protection systems to start to activate. So to minimize that impact, we minimize size of units. So when we lose those units, our system can kind of be able to protect themselves and not go into a blackout.
What is the primary purpose of the ESS, the energy storage system, used for this project?
It's for energy shifting.
Okay, and what does that mean when you shift the energy?
So, because we, during phase two, would acquire over 120 megawatts of renewable energy. It was impacting our dispatching of our regular thermal units that would help, I guess, stabilize the system, especially during intermittent type events. So our system needs to have some conventional units online in order to support and stabilize the system. So when we started to look into phase three, it was looking like allowing additional PV during the daytime would have a negative impact on our grid stability.
Okay, for phase two, are there any batteries associated with the phase two projects?
Yes.
What is their purpose?
They're for ramp control. And that's to minimize the impacts of the intermittency caused by shading.
And so when the energy is shifted, when is it shifted to?
So basically what we required was that all the energy that was to be produced would have to be stored into batteries and to be delivered outside of the production period, the solar production period, which would be towards the evening. And I think we amended it later to say between 5 and 12 p.m.
Okay, and the original period of time was?
6 to 10.
Was there any, to your understanding and invitation bid of the amendments, was there any minimum capacity that the bidders could offer for either one of these projects?
No.
Okay, and the maximum was limited to what?
The point of interconnection.
Okay, what is the point of interconnection?
30 megawatts. It's where the project would tie into the transmission.
What limits, if any, were there on the bidder's design for a battery storage system?
The limit would be the export capacity, which would be at the interconnection system, and that they were required to have the PV inverters behind the ESS inverters.
Okay. And then was there any limits on the size of the battery storage system?
No.
What is the relationship between the battery storage system and the PV installation or the PV charging system?
So the batteries would be charged at a certain rate based on the size of the facility. So the PV system is 30 megawatts max, then the maximum charge rate would be a 30 megawatt charging system. But on the discharge side, depending on your output requirements, if you don't design for that, then your charge and your discharge would be limited to 30 megawatts. But because we were compressing the delivery time, we wanted to make sure that the projects were designed to account for that, so that you would actually discharge at a higher rate in order to deplete your battery storage, or your energy stored in the battery.
And what rate would it be for charging during the day? Would that be a lower rate?
It could be, especially when you're initiating a 4-hour limit. If your production was within 8 hours, then you wouldn't have enough time to discharge your battery completely by the end of that 4-hour period.
Okay, and is that why that 4-hour period was extended to 5 to midnight?
Yeah.
What is the relationship of the ESS shall be equal to or greater than the 145% of the megawatt rating of the PV charging system? What was the purpose of
that? The purpose was that to make sure that they designed for discharge that would be in a limited time period, basically shorter than the 8-hour period.
What limits, if any, in either the invitation for bid or the amendments to GPA put on the size of the PV array?
I'm sorry.
What limits, if any, in the invitation for bid or the amendments to GPA put on the size of the PV array that the bidders could build?
The only limit was that they could only use the leased property. I mean, there was no limit, but there was some questions on whether they could use other properties, and they said no.
So each site, the bidder had the flexibility. Well, tell me what the bidder could do with each site as far as the number of panels they could put on it.
They could design for, they had to design for the panels, the storage, and the substation. So as long as they could fit everything within the lease properties, then that was their option.
Was there any restrictions on the dispatch of the energy shifting batteries other than the 30 megawatt interconnection limit?
We had indicated that the primarily they would be used for energy shifting, which would need to be dispatched at night or during the non-production period.
Okay.
If you take a look at the smaller book there, Exhibit B, and I think it's the second page of that exhibit. Okay, and if you'd go down to the fifth bullet. The examples that were put in there, what was the basis for the examples that were put in?
It was to make sure that they sized appropriately the battery discharge. So that the charge rate and the discharge rate were not the same, because the discharge needed to be greater than the charge.
And that one, what was the maximum capacity in that for the ESS that GPA would allow?
$49. I'm sorry. What did you ask me, ESS or?
Yes, the maximum capacity of the ESS or the battery storage system.
Maximum capacity of 40 megawatts.
Sorry, did you say 40 or 4?
40.
Were there different amendments that went back and forth over the lifespan of the, when the original bid was in November to, I guess, when the bids were finally accepted?
Yes, there were.
Okay. What was Amendment 8 at Exhibit C? What did that mainly consist of? If you turn to Exhibit C.
We provided the master lease from Navy, which they allowed us to do. And then answers to questions that were provided from the bidders.
To your knowledge, on any of the amendments, did GPA restrict any questions from any bidders? Did we provide an answer to them? As far as you're aware?
As far as I'm aware, we answered the question that was submitted within the time frame allowed.
If you turn to Exhibit D, Amendment 17. If you look at question 1.1.1b, if you could read that.
I'm sorry, where
are you? Middle of the page, 1.1.1, question 21b.
Appendix D.
So I'm sorry, Exhibit D, and it would be the second page.
Second page.
10822 on the top.
Yes.
Okay. Question 21B, starting with what is the maximum procurement?
Objection, there's no question 21.
It says 1.1.1 and then says question 21, and there's three sub-questions.
It's in the middle of the page.
Okay, yes. 1.1.1, question 21.
What is the maximum procurement? That one?
Yes.
Okay. And what was the answer that GPA provided for that?
Well, so that question was, could you select 230 megawatt projects? And we said yes.
And then, what does the last sentence of this answer, nominal operation is 20 megawatt AC, mean? And what was the GPA response to that answer?
The objective was asked and answered yesterday. In fact, I think her testimony was she didn't write it, she didn't know what it meant, and you should ask John Cruz, I think was her testimony from yesterday.
We'll sustain the objection. I remember that one discussion here. So down.
Okay. We can move on to Exhibit E. What is that?
This is committee letter.
And what is that?
This is for the Step 1 qualifications, where we identify who had passed the technical qualification would be able to move forward to the Step 2 price proposal evaluation.
And those were the five bidders that submitted bids, is that accurate?
Five bidders with two proposals each, yes.
And if you turn to Exhibit F, what is that?
This is the committee letter, where it was determined who the lowest responsive bidder was for the phase step two proposal evaluation.
Okay, and you were part of the evaluation committee, is that correct?
Yes.
And the two lowest responsive bidders were who? For both sites?
It was NG Solar for both sites.
Okay, and attached to that is that the evaluation summary in bids for each bidder?
This is the price proposal summaries and the evaluation.
And attachment B is what?
It's the evaluation summary.
Is that the net present value summary as well?
Yes, the system total cost.
If you turn to Exhibit G, what is that?
This is the committee letter addressing Glideflap's, concerns. I don't know that this was a protest at the time.
Okay, and did you assist in the preparation of that letter?
Yes, it was a committee letter.
And that addressed the concerns of Glideflap's letter to GPA, is that accurate?
Yes, we felt it did.
If you turn to Exhibit H. What is that, if you're aware?
It's not a document that I prepared, but it would be, a notice of the analysis and selection from procurement.
We turn to Exhibit I. What was that?
So this is now the committee's letter addressing the protest, which was pretty similar, if not the same, as the previous letter.
Before we move on, I just need to fix something. Can we just take a short break? We're off the record at 3:46 p.m. We're back on the record at 4:02 p.m.
Where
were we? I believe it's the...
Good afternoon, Ms. Vaughn. PV charging system is defined in the IFB or its amendments?
I don't know that it is.
I'm sorry.
I don't know that it is.
Did GPA ever in the bid or the IFB tell bidders that they could propose a project with a PV charging system that was smaller than the actual installed PV capacity? I guess my point is that the previous witness said that the terms in Amendment Number 17 that we discussed with you and Yeah, the GPA, so we'll just stick with GPAs instead of B, page 2. You know, the same bullet point we've been discussing, you know, for the last 2 days. The last witness represented that the terms PV charging system, PV installation, PV capacity were used interchangeably in that paragraph. So I'm just trying to determine if the bidders would have been directed in any other place in the IFB to ensure that their PV charging system could be greater than the actual PV capacity.
Was there any place else in the bid?
Yes.
Outside of this area?
Sure. Whatever your answer
is. I think only the clarification that we answered later on.
So the only two places then would be here and then at 13.
I'm guessing. I'm thinking that's the one I could remember because it's the one that's been referenced several times.
Okay. So if I understand the answer, it would be this paragraph in this amendment 13. And the clarification, which you would probably be calling Amendment 17, is that correct?
I think it was what we referenced in the committee's letter regarding glide path. I think that was the one. I don't know if that was Amendment 17, maybe.
Okay, well, I don't understand. What letter are you talking about?
The committee's letter that identified the clarification in regards to the statement. It was further clarified later.
Wouldn't that be Amendment 17?
I'm thinking it is. I don't know off the
bat. Why don't we try to go to D, just so we make sure we're clear. I think D is Amendment 17. Would you agree with that?
D is Amendment 17.
So, I guess just show me that portion that you were just referencing.
There were clarifications in Amendment 17. I'm looking at, because I know that he referenced in the letter in Exhibit G.
Okay, so Exhibit G.
Page 354 in the top there. It says the clarification is from the procedure period.
I can't hear you. You're saying page 354 of 12,444, and you're now in Exhibit G of GPA's exhibits?
I'm in Exhibit G, and I'm looking for any reference where we would have said something that it would be higher. So I'm looking at this because this is where I'm thinking that may be.
Okay.
I don't know exactly where it's at. So this is in Amendment 17, and there's several areas that could be. So if you don't mind, I'm going to just look at those.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
question was, did we ever state a maximum or a that it had to be larger?
That's okay. Let's review that. Did GPA ever tell the bidders in the IFB that they could propose a project with a PV charging system that was smaller than the actual installed PV capacity?
No.
Okay, so no. Is that the answer?
The PV charging system would be smaller than the PV capacity.
That was never said, right?
No.
Okay. Did you review all the bid proposals? I think I asked you this yesterday, but I don't recall the answer.
Yes.
Okay. Did GlidePath submit a project with a PV charging system that was any different than Angie's?
I don't know. I mean, I don't understand your question. What do you mean?
So, well, why don't you tell me what you think a PV charging system is?
The PV charging would be that side of the battery that charges the battery.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, under your definition, was GlidePath project, their charging system, any different than Angie's? In size, I guess.
They were the same size. Their capacities were the same size.
I think you testified there was no limit on the battery storage system, correct?
There was no limit on the energy storage requirements.
But I think yesterday you told me that in Amendment 13 on the paragraph we've been discussing ad nauseum, that at least the battery had to be 145% or greater than the PV charging system, right?
So there's a megawatt component for power capacity, and there's an energy component for storage capability. So that's how big your battery is that'll discharge that energy over time. Those are two different things.
Okay. Can you explain to me?
So the maximum power rating would be the PV side with the battery discharge size. That's the 30 megawatt AC limit that we would reference on the AC side. Now the energy is, over time, you take that 30 megawatts, multiply it by 4 or multiply it by 8, that's energy, megawatt hours. So batteries have a power system control system that controls the discharge and charge for that system. And then it has the battery storage system. So they're different. But together, they're a system.
Okay. And your clarification then is that the only limitation would have been on the storage system, that 145%.
Would be on the charging capability and the discharge capability.
So I'm sure that's separate from the storage.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the two different parts that you...
I mean, it's still part of the energy storage system, but it's like, I guess, there's only so much you can put into, depending on how you design your battery. If you only have an opening so wide, you can only put so much in at a time. Same on the outside. If your opening is only so wide, only so much can flow out. But batteries contain, the system contains multiple battery components that actually store the energy. So you can multiply, you can have so much of that to store energy. And then it's just the limit would be how big your opening on both sides of that battery is to allow that storage to flow through, or that energy to flow through that storage.
So on the outflow, limited to 30 megawatts.
Yes.
After Amendment 17 was issued by GPA, were there any other opportunities to ask questions by the bidders?
If an amendment came out and their clarification clarification question, but only on those amendments that went out. You couldn't go back to anything else unless that amendment may have triggered confusion or something.
Earlier, you told me that the discharge time, you know, was originally compressed to 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
and then it was sort of extended to some additional time, five to twelve p.m., so 7 hours. Why didn't GPA change the 145% limit then? Because there was going to be more opportunity to discharge.
It was addressed in their amendments that it was, the reason for that was to make sure that you designed your discharge to allow all of the energy to be depleted from the storage within that time frame. Now that you increased it, that didn't apply anymore.
Was the charging rate increased or remained the same?
I would say it would remain the same on your design because you would want to maximize the charge of the database based on the output of your PV capacity. So when you talk about charge, the PV only charges on one side. It doesn't charge on the discharge. That's a discharge side. So when we talk about PV charging, that's only that side of the battery. The other side is a discharge. PV is not involved anymore.
Yes, I understand that. In the battery is DC, is going to come out of discharge as DC into the inverter. The phase two project, you said there's batteries being used in that project for, I guess, ramp control.
Yeah.
So do those batteries actually store more than 15 or 30 minutes worth of power?
I believe they're rated at 16 megawatts 1 hour.
Okay. So different.
16 megawatt hours.
Yeah, different than these batteries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're very short. They're for a short term.
So this is GPA's first kind of long-term storage battery project with shifting of...
We have energy. Another project. The ESS, but this one's for renewables, yes.
What's the other ESS project?
We have, it hasn't commissioned yet, it's a project, but we have a 24 megawatt 15 minute battery, and we have a 16 megawatt 1 hour battery. So they're going through construction.
In your testimony earlier, those are different than these batteries.
They're not pressure things, but for mitigation, renewable integration, and for frequency response, which is different.
So, I guess, just to make sure, this is the only shifting project that GPA is involved in?
Yes.
And the only one you've been involved in? The Amendment 13, would you say that was a significant addition to the procurement when it came out?
No, because we're still buying energy and it's still being shifted. I think that the reason for that was to ensure that there was an understanding of what we expected from the battery performance. But the battery was still part of the project.
Just a few questions, Ms. LeBlanc. I want to go back to this chart that you were shown earlier yesterday. I don't know if we have a number for this. Has it been identified in the record as a number for this exhibit?
No, we just submitted it. How are we going to mark it?
What's your next exhibit in line?
It'd be 10.
10?
Yeah, we can mark it as 10.
If everyone's okay with that.
Okay. So, Ms. Sablon, do you recall being asked some questions about this chart yesterday during your testimony?
Yes.
Okay, now, let me represent to you that in your absence, when you were here yesterday, I think they've added two other categories here. But I just want to ask you some simple questions about this Exhibit 10. When you were asked questions about you were simply asked to confirm the math on this page, correct?
Yes.
And you weren't asked anything else about, you know, what this page represents or what the numbers represents, correct?
Yeah, they asked me, does that add up? And I said yes.
Okay, and that was your only answer in response to Exhibit 10?
Yes.
Okay. Now, also in your testimony yesterday, I was just a little bit confused when you said, when you were talking about phases 1, 2, and 3 of the projects that GPA has sponsored or has gotten out here in Guam. When you mentioned that there were amendments to phase 1 and then amendments to phase 2 and amendments to phase 3, each of these are standalone projects, right?
Yes.
Okay, and the amendments are not, they don't go from one phase to two, phase two to phase three, right?
Well, when we were talking about that,
right,
we started with the phase 1, obviously, mm-hmm. It was a successfully contracted mm-hmm. project. But we ran into issues and we amended the bid and the contract to address those issues, which included some storage.
Okay.
And then further onto that, when we did the phase 3, which is this bid, it was further amended for the storage to be from ramp control. So there's no batteries in phase 1. We included batteries in phase 2 for ramp control. Phase 3, those batteries then became shifting batteries. They were not doing ramp control, they were completely moving the discharge to a different time.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Just to summarize the some of the exhibits that you've been asked about by your counsel, Mr. Bota. Basically, it was GPA's determination that the NG bid was the most responsive and the most responsible for this Phase 3 project, correct?
Yes, that's what we decided.
Okay. If I can have just a few minutes. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Nothing further.
Okay.
Thank you,
Ms.
Sablon.
Are you
done?
Yes. Well done.
Go back to the freezer.
Freezing
room. Sorry, I'm done again, right?
I'm
leaving.
She really wants to make sure.
You're the only one who gets to go.
Okay. So, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning?
10 o'clock? Yes. Did you say 10 o'clock?
Yeah, we're starting on this side, right?
Yes. We'll have Mr. Bingo go in the morning then, but can we have the engineers go around 3 o'clock?
Yeah,
yes.
That's why I said start at
yes.
10.
Okay, thank you so much.
If we go until 1 o'clock with him, then we can come back
okay.
from lunch at 3 and start up with the lawn.
That sounds great.
Just one other housekeeping matter. I wasn't sure how long we were going to be going this week. I have a 9 o'clock hearing before the district court in Saipan on Thursday. Is it possible for me to, for us to take a break while I attend that hearing? It should not go more than an hour.
Oh, that's Zoom. You're not flying up.
No, I'm not flying up. Otherwise, they're going to quarantine me. No, it's just by Zoom. Yes, sir.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, thank you.
We just started at 10.
Okay, that's fine.
So would we expect to wrap up, I guess, with maybe Thursday morning with closing after that? Would that be reasonable?
I don't know.
Just Mr. Public Auditor, are you you're going to entertain closings, or you prefer us to put it on paper just so we know what to prepare?
Both.
Thank you.
So both?
Yeah.
When should we file any closing papers?
It's usually filed.
I'm sorry, to be closing argument and
yeah.
papers to be filed. I'm sure we'll work on the proposed findings and so on, but closing arguments for oral presentation should be prepared. Just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
For it's going to be Friday morning because I have some meetings in the afternoon on Friday.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We're off the record at 4:24 p.m.